Good morning. I'm Joy Cardine with you on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. It's coming up on about 9.5 minutes past 6 o'clock on this Thursday, January the 4th. And the question we will ask you this hour is whether you agree or not with our guest who says it would be a good idea to abolish presidential term limits. The Constitution says presidents can only serve 2 terms. This was a constitutional amendment that was added in 1947. We'll talk about why our guest says this was a bad move and why a president like President Bush can simply do what he wants for the most part when he's a lame duck in his second term because he doesn't have to worry about the polls or his reelection or what people think or want. Says President Bush doesn't appear to be listening to the people or the military experts or the Iraq study group who apparently want a new course in Iraq, want to start withdrawing troops from Iraq, because by all accounts, next week, President Bush is going to announce a plan to surge troops in Iraq. Our guest says, why should President Bush listen? He can't seek a third term, but maybe we should let him. Maybe we should let all future presidents run as many times as they'd like. What do you think? 1-800-642-1234. 1-800-642-1234. Toll free from anywhere. In Madison, 263-1890, 263-1890. Should presidential term limits be abolished? Should we repeal the amendment, the constitutional amendment to the U.S. Constitution? Our guest is John Zimmerman, a professor of history and education at New York University. He is author of the book Innocence Abroad, American Teachers in the American Century, and he wrote a recent piece that appeared in the Christian Science Monitor entitled Abolish Presidential Term Limits, and he joins us by telephone. Good morning.
Good morning. Thanks for having me.
So you say President Bush has a deaf ear for all those who say there should be a change of course in Iraq because he doesn't have to listen?
Well, I certainly think that's one reason. After all, if he were eligible to run for president, or if indeed he was running again, I have no doubt that Bush, of all people, who's proven himself to be a very adept vote-getter, would be working harder at getting votes.
Yeah. He's always said, though, he's never paid attention to the polls and he doesn't govern by polls.
Well, what can I say? I'm deeply skeptical of that. It seems to me that if you're a politician, you have to cater to the voters, and indeed you should. I'm often confused when people say, with respect to a politician, she or he is simply trying to get votes. I think that's their job.
Mm. And a lame duck president doesn't have to worry about votes.
Indeed not. Now, of course, I'm sure that some of your listeners are sitting there thinking, this fellow Zimmerman just likes Bush and therefore wants him to be able to run again. And I want to emphasize that I'm not a supporter of Bush. And that's why hopefully I have a little bit of credibility on this issue. As a historian, I'd argue that as best we can tell right now, Bush has been one of our worst presidents. But it seems to me that people who disagree with me or people who agree with me should have the right to vote on that question. And they don't.
Let's talk a little bit about the history of this. This was added to the Constitution because?
Well, it was added to the Constitution several years after Franklin Roosevelt died. And that's significant because, of course, Franklin Roosevelt was our only president who was elected more than twice. He was elected 4 times and died in the midst of his 4th term. The Founding Fathers established an informal 2-term tradition. What that means is they never wrote anything into our founding documents about this subject. But the historical record indicates that they believe very strongly in a tradition of 2 terms because they thought that if presidents exceeded 2 terms that they would become so-called presidents for life or kings, which of course was a model we were trying to get away from. And so up until that time, presidents respected this 2-term tradition. FDR did not. After Truman became president, Republicans took over Congress, and they very quickly started trying to amend the Constitution, which, as your listeners must know, is a very laborious process. The Founding Fathers made the Constitution very difficult to change, and they took 4 years, 4 years to inscribe this amendment into the Constitution.
Yeah. But so the Congress at the time of FDR's death thought it was a bad idea that he was elected four times.
Well, not precisely at the time, but once the Republicans had become majority in Congress, which was a couple years after FDR had died. Obviously, there were different dimensions of FDR's presidency and different parts of the New Deal that the Republicans objected to, but more than anything else, people objected to the idea, especially Republicans, that the other team could have a monopoly on the White House. And so it was very much FDR's, shall we say, violation of the two-term tradition, which it was, that inspired this amendment.
Yeah. Well, weren't the founding fathers right in that this could create a king-like situation?
I think the historical record, especially the recent historical record, suggests that the founding fathers were wrong. And, you know, the founding fathers were wrong about a bunch of things, and there's no reason that we should pretend otherwise. They were absolutely wrong about the enslavement of human beings, and they were also wrong about this issue. Keep in mind that before President Bush, of the last five presidents that sought re-election, three of them lost. That would be 60%. One of them, of course, we're venerating today, Gerald Ford. Mm-hmm. Then there was Jimmy Carter. And then there was Bush 1, i.e. George Herbert Walker Bush, the father of the current president. So especially post-war history suggests that this idea that doing away with this amendment would create a kind of president for life, it's simply wrong. The majority of the presidents who have tried to remain in office have failed. Does incumbency have certain advantages? Absolutely. I would argue, actually, that those advantages are greater in Congress than they are in the White House.
We're talking with a guest who says presidential term limits should be abolished, that the 22nd Amendment to the Constitution that bars presidents from running for a third term should be repealed. What do you think? What questions do you have? 1-800-642-1234. 1-800-642-1234. In Madison, 263-1890, 263-1890. Or send us an email to talk@wpr.org. Please include your first name and your community with your email. My guest is John Zimmerman, a professor of history and education at New York University. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Joy Cardine. It's about 18 minutes now past 6 o'clock. We're talking with John Zimmerman. He's a professor of history and education at New York University. He wrote a recent piece that appeared in the Christian Science Monitor that was called Abolish Presidential Term Limits, and we thought this was an interesting idea that you would like to talk about. He argues that the 22nd Amendment to the Constitution that bars President Bush or any other president to run for a third term means the president can really do whatever he wants to do, despite poll numbers, despite election results like what we saw in November, or anything else. And he argues we should let President Bush and all future presidents run as many times as they'd like, that they would be more accountable to the people if that were the case. What do you think? 1-800-642-1234 in Madison, 263-1890. Our first caller is Jerry in Fort Atkinson. Hi, Jerry. You're on the air.
Hi. How are you?
Very good. How are you?
Good. I don't believe that presidents should be allowed to run for more than one term, much less two. I believe that that Bush won, as was called earlier. I believe he bought his presidency, and I believe his son bought his presidency, too, both times. I think a president should be allowed a four-year term limit, and then he can do the best he can for the country and try to be remembered and try to be a good man. And I just don't believe that George Bush, especially this one, should have another chance at running this country anymore.
Yeah. Jerry, what about a president maybe that you liked? You think just one term is enough for a president, even if you think that president's a great man or a woman?
Well, like Gerald Ford, I mean, I thought he was a good president. He was a healing president. I don't really agree with parking Nixon, but other than that, I thought he was a great president. And in a situation where he didn't have a full term, then, yeah, you could let him run again. But I believe that 4 years is enough. I believe that people just get too stressed out and too burned out, and they lose sight of what's important to this country. And they should just have one term, I believe.
All right. Well, a reaction to that, Professor Zimmerman?
Well, you know, I think the caller is making some interesting assertions, but they're so interesting the voters should be allowed to judge them. the caller says that both Bushes, quote, bought their presidency, and the caller says that, you know, people get so stressed out on the job that they can't perform well. I'm not going to contest these claims. They're interesting claims, but why not let the voters decide on them? That is, if indeed there was something untoward in the way the Bushes were elected, it seems to me the voters should be able to rule on that. If the presidency itself does something to corrupt its incumbent, then the voters should be able to rule on that as well. Why tie their hands?
Mm-hmm. Thanks, Jerry, for the call. We talked a little bit just before the weather break about the power of the incumbency, but you pointed out that in recent years that power hasn't been very powerful with the president.
Yes, it's simply not true to say that if you're incumbent president, you can be elected automatically. Recent history shows that that is not true. That's not to say things couldn't change, but it is simply false to assert that once you're in the White House, you can stay there forever.
Yeah. I think I read, maybe it was your piece or somewhere else, that Grant attempted or did run for a third term but was defeated.
Yes. His party thought he had been an ineffective president, and they went ahead and nominated somebody else.
We'll go next to Joan in Shorewood. Hi, Joan. You're on the air.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call. I don't believe there should be any change in the Constitution to allow a third term. It could be a disaster if you have a president that is, like our present president, that has created great difficulties and disasters in the country. To give him a third chance, we have no guarantee that he would, this type of president wouldn't do exactly the same thing again and create even greater damage. If we had any change at all to the Constitution, we should follow the lead of some countries like Costa Rica to allow one term, where they're given an opportunity to serve the country, make an improvement, and then they are not allowed to run for a second term.
Yeah. Joan, what about the argument, though, that a president like President Bush would be much more accountable to the people if he were able to run for a third term? He wouldn't just do what he wants while he's a lame duck, despite people's wishes.
He would follow possibly the same pattern he's doing now. Trust me, I'll be accountable to the people. We're going to be bring the nation together. We're going to be a unifier. He's done the exact opposite. Give him a third term. He can do the same thing, because after all, what has he got to lose when he's out of office at the end of the third term? Following that same line of thought, you could say, well, then give him a fourth term. See what he does this time.
Our guest is arguing don't put any limits on how many times a president can run.
Then he could be functioning as a dictator or an emperor.
We wouldn't vote him out, Joan?
Some people might be so totally partisan, they may not. Mm-hmm. And the elections could be rigged by someone that has this amount of power for this length of time. We've seen all kinds of disasters where a grab for power can just get out of control.
Yeah. Well, what about Joan's concerns, Professor Zimmerman?
Well, I think Joan's concerns are less with the current president, and by the way, I share concerns about him, than they are with the voters. Joan is making a complaint about the voters. Joan feels that the voters are not informed or are not smart or are not sophisticated enough to be able to turn out somebody who is clearly either corrupt or ineffective or warped. I admire the call, but I think that's a deeply cynical view. I think that the American voters are fully able to render wise judgments, and we should allow them to do so.
Yeah. What about the voting machines might not allow us to do so?
Well, again, it's not the president that creates the mechanisms for voting. Mm-hmm. It's the Congress, right? Mm-hmm. We have many different, and then there are different balances of power between the states and the federal government with respect to the way that elections are organized and regulated. So it's not not strictly a presidential matter. Indeed, it's mainly not a presidential matter. And part of the wisdom of the Founding Fathers was building in all of these other checks and balances, and we should allow them to operate. They've done quite well in the past.
Joan, thanks a lot for the call. Let me move now to Janet in Appleton. Hi, Janet. You're on the air.
Hi. Good morning.
Morning.
I have basically a two-part partial question. First of all, I would like to know where our Founding Fathers came up with this arbitrary number of 4 years. And then just as a follow-up, I've often considered that it would be a smarter although very difficult to change, to have a six-year term. Sometimes 4 years doesn't seem like enough. 8 years seems like too much. And with midterm elections, changing, you know, positions of Congress from Republican to Democrat and back again, it just seems that there would be another alternative.
Now, well, yeah, can you give us a little bit of information on that, Professor Zimmerman?
Well, 4 years, you know, 4 years was a compromise. One of the important things to remember about the people who drafted the Constitution that we've got to remind ourselves is that they disagreed fundamentally with each other. One of the problems in our contemporary discourse is when politicians or citizens trot out the Founding Fathers in the context of an argument. They collapse the differences between them, and we're tricked into thinking the Founding Fathers were this kind of unitary force. And, of course, they weren't. They were 55 human beings with different ideas, different views. You may have read that Alexander Hamilton, among other people, wanted the president to serve for life. And of course, other people said, well, that wouldn't that be kind of like a king? And he said, well, yes, actually, that especially a new country needs that kind of stability. Hamilton also imagined the Senate as being appointed and serving for life, much like, of course, the House of Lords in the UK. Then there were other people who wanted the president just to serve for 1 year, sometimes for two. So I'm not exactly sure about how four came about, but it was absolutely a compromise. With respect to the six-year term, there have been several people in the press who have proposed that recently, precisely because, of course, the current U.S. Senate serves for six years. Although remember that it's only in our own century that the current Senate has been elected by you and me. Up until the Progressive Era 100 years ago, it was elected indirectly by state legislatures.
Yeah, and there are no term limits on running for Congress.
That's right.
And yet there we do see Congress members reelected and maybe more of a power of incumbency.
Absolutely, especially in the post-war era. And so if there were a case for term limits, I would argue that it would be stronger, especially for the House of Representatives, than it would be for president. However, there, again, I would argue that term limits are precisely the wrong reform. It seems to me the reform that has to happen in Congress has to do with the way that districts are drawn and redrawn and gerrymandered, and, of course, the way that campaigns are financed. It seems to me, again, we as voters, we as citizens, have the power to change those things, and that's what we should do instead of putting arbitrary caps on the number of times that people can run.
Thanks, Janet. Jeff in Mukwa. Hi, you're on the air.
Good morning, and thanks for taking my call. With all due respect to your guest there today, I couldn't disagree more with one comment he made at the top of the show, and that is the president's job is to get votes. To me, that's about number 50 on the list of things to do. And if we just look at our current situation and our current president, who, by the way, was selected and therefore never even reelected, and the mess we have, to give this person even more than another day in office, I don't know if anybody wants to agree with that at all. Mm. And you know, we kicked out the monarchy. We don't want anything like that.
Yeah. Very briefly, Professor Zimmerman, because we're almost at a news break, less than 30 seconds, actually.
Well, it's an interesting point, but I'm a little bit confused by it. On the one hand, the caller says the person shouldn't be looking for votes, or that isn't the job of the person. And the other hand, the caller says we don't want a monarchy. What could be more monarchical than not seeking votes? Yeah. The reason we don't have a monarch is our leader is elected by voters.
We're talking with John Zimmerman, a professor of history and education at New York University, who says we should abolish presidential term limits. I'm Joy Cardine. We'll check the news. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Joy Cardine. Happy to have you with us on this Thursday, January the 4th. It's about 6:36. We're talking with John Zimmerman, a professor of history and education at New York University. He's the author of a book, Innocence Abroad, American Teachers in the American Century. But we're talking with him about a recent piece that he wrote for the Christian Science Monitor that was entitled Abolish Presidential Term Limits. He says that we should allow all future presidents to run as many times as they would like to do, not limit them to only two terms, as stated by the 22nd Amendment to the Constitution. He says that if we did this, a president like President Bush might listen more to the people, to the voters. President Bush is reportedly ready to announce, maybe as early as next week, a surge in troops in Iraq when the Iraq Study Group and other military experts and the American people are clearly disappointed with what's going on in Iraq and are hoping that we would withdraw from Iraq, not necessarily send more troops in. 1-800-642-1234. Should we abolish presidential term limits? In Madison, 263-1890. Would that make our presidents more accountable instead of lame ducks? We wonder what you think. We got an email, Professor Zimmerman, from Jeremy in Madison, saying that the argument that being able to run for a third term would cause President Bush to follow the voters' will is false. The president has not followed the voters' will from the very beginning, simply relying on trashing his opponents. You want to talk about that?
Well, I mean, obviously, his initial election was highly contested, and indeed, he won a minority of the vote. But he won a majority of the vote the second time around. True, it was a 51% majority. It was an extremely slender majority. But the millions upon millions of Americans voted for President Bush. I was not one of them. But my faith in democracy, I think, exceeds my distaste for President Bush.
Next, we'll go to Dan in Jefferson. Hello, Dan. You're on the air.
Oh, thanks. I have my opinion, you know, of these people who don't agree with this. You know, I think this would be a great move because only good can come from this. The president's going to have to work hard for his first four. And if he wants to stay for a second, we the people are going to vote for him to stay there. And we did this time thinking President Bush would do good his second term. And he's not. You know, he's fallen drastically, and I voted for him. And it's just, and we don't have the guts to kick him out, you know.
I'm curious, sir, would you vote for him a third time?
No, I would not. I would not. See, and that's where this is a good idea, because it gives the people who backed the president for the two terms to vote again for him if they want it, which I would not. I would vote for someone else, because this is are right. If we have someone good, they're going to do a good job. They're going to stay there longer. It allows them to run for four, maybe six terms. And also, on top of it, it's going to make everyone else that works in a government building or for the government to work harder, because they know, now I can go to be a president and have the chance to prove to these people I'm a good person, I can make things happen and good things happen, because now that they can stay for four terms if they'd like. And on top of that, I wouldn't doubt it that, say, maybe within the next 50 years, I bet the age is going to change. You need a younger person. You need someone in there that might be 35, 40 years old. Who's to say that won't happen? And if it does, that's great. You know, because still, the younger they are, the longer they can run, the better they're doing.
Well, the Constitution requires that they be 35. Are you suggesting that we should allow people younger than that and change the Constitution to allow that?
Well, it seems like we're getting these 50, 60, 70-year-old people in there, you know, and they're old school. You know, you need this younger generation, because we know what we want and we know what our kids want, you know, and what's best for them. And no one listens.
You know, and I'm thinking, Professor Zimmerman, that a lot of our callers who are not so wild about this idea, in part because it sounds like they're not so wild about President Bush, might be singing a different tune if, for example, Barack Obama, if they really like him, was elected president, was doing a good job, they would want someone like that to stay there as long as he wanted to.
Oh, indeed. And near the end of Clinton's administration, some of his supporters were talking about how he should be allowed to run again. Obviously, without this amendment, he could have, and I believe he would have. But the current questioner, I think, highlights what I see as the cynicism of some of the earlier voters, not just about the process, but about people who voted for Bush. And remember, I did not. But in some of their calls, I detected this idea that pro-Bush voters were somehow automatons, were robots, who would simply go mechanically to the polls each time to reelect him. But indeed, the current caller indicates that that's simply not so. They had their own reasons for voting for him. They're not my reasons. I don't agree with them, but they're reasonable people. As in the case of this caller, their judgments shift, and we should allow a process which respects that.
Yeah, and the polls would indicate that President Bush would not have much support if he ran for a third term with, what, you know, the less than 30% or so.
Exactly. Although, of course, my point is that if he were running for a third term, I think he'd be behaving differently and perhaps his poll numbers would be higher. Mm. Perhaps that's what all the callers previous to this voter are objecting to.
Yeah. But, you know, President Bush, after the first term, it seems to me that he didn't have skyrocketing poll numbers then either, but he didn't have any challengers. Say, you know, maybe John McCain wouldn't run for president if President Bush were running for a third term.
I'm not sure I understand.
There wouldn't be challengers in the same party if a president were allowed to keep on running. You wouldn't see, you know, because a lot of people,
right,
you know, don't challenge the incumbent.
Well, again, I mean, the example of Grant, which you raised at the beginning of the show, suggests otherwise. Of course, that was 100 years ago. I mean, there was an incumbent president who could have run again and was challenged from within his party. You know, I think that the Republican Party today is just deeply, deeply divided along several different axes. And, you know, no matter how long a president could run, I think that they would be that there would be portions of the party that would be attacking him vehemently.
Yeah, and of course, Ronald Reagan challenged Gerald Ford in the primary, didn't he?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. And one of the posthumous comments that was attributed to Ford, which has caused a little bit of consternation in certain GOP circles, is he said that he thought that the kind of scarring effect of Reagan's attacks in 76 during that pretty bruising nomination battle were one of the things that caused Ford to lose to Carter.
Mm-hmm. Thanks, Dan, for the call. Kevin in Wisconsin Rapids. Hi, you're on the air.
Good morning. I think that the shorter term, you know, like two terms, would concentrate the mind of, in this case, the president, and he would have to use his political capital to get three or four things done that he really wanted to. If he's in there longer, he might start to look around and figure what other things he could stick his fingers into. We in Wisconsin here elected Governor Thompson how many terms? And while I agreed with him initially on a lot of things, towards the end of his term in office, he was poking around in things almost, it seemed to me, out of boredom, looking for something else that he could do. The old power corrupts, and I've got the power, I want to use it somewhere.
But isn't that the fault of the voters, sir, and not of Tommy Thompson? And aren't you asking for a system that would essentially tie the voters' hands and prevent them from rendering judgments of Thompson?
Yeah.
Yes and no. I think we're a country of laws, and we do need to set some limitations here and there. And I don't know.
Yeah, Kevin, and I don't know if Governor Thompson was a busybody, but are you? Yeah, I mean, I think a lot of people would argue that he wasn't necessarily corrupted by power. He's still very popular. If he ran again today, he might win again.
Yeah, that's possible.
Yeah, but anyway, Professor Zimmerman, anything on this that power can corrupt?
Well, absolutely it can corrupt, but I would argue that it can corrupt more when it is unchecked. I absolutely agree with the voters' concerns about the corrupting potential of power, but that's precisely why I think we need the voters to check it. I'm quite astonished, frankly, at how many callers say, I'm very worried about the corrupting influences of power, so let's limit what the voters can do to check it. To me, that makes no sense at all. Right now, it seems that we've got a president who, in some senses, I would argue, I don't want to use the word corrupt because that's a little too heavy, but I would say precisely because of the rules that we've created, this president is using his power in a way that doesn't have to address the voters. And what could be more corrupting than that?
We are talking with John Zimmerman. He is a professor of history and education at New York University. He wrote a piece that appeared recently in the Christian Science Monitor entitled "Abolish Presidential Term Limits," arguing that President Bush or any future president should be able to run for more than two terms, should be able to run for a third term or as many times as he or she wants to. Should we abolish presidential term limits? Would that make our leaders, our presidents, more accountable to the people? 1-800-642-1234 in Madison, 263-1890. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network. You're listening to the Ideas Network. I'm Joy Cardine. It's coming up on about 11 minutes before 7 o'clock, talking about whether or not we should abolish presidential term limits instead of prohibiting a president from running for a third term. Should we repeal the 22nd Amendment to the Constitution that bars presidents from running for a third term? Karen in Shorewood is our next caller. Hi, you're on the air.
Thank you. This is a very good and timely topic. I hope I have a bad cold, so I hope I'm coming off okay.
No, you sound great. Thanks for calling.
All right. I'm glad at least there's one other person in the United States who agrees with me. I think this was bad when it was ratified in 1951. I don't think it's ever been a good idea, but I think there's three things that have to happen. One, I think this needs to be repealed. I think not only can the president do whatever he wants, but on the other way, he can't because people in his party don't have to pay any attention to him because he hasn't any power. But I think we also need to pass meaningful campaign finance, and we need to do something about voter apathy. We are probably the worst in the entire world where people vote as to how people actually vote.
Oh, she's singing your tune, Professor Zimmerman.
Yes, absolutely. I'm glad to hear that there are two of us. I'm afraid that we'll need a few more than that.
Absolutely.
The only thing that I would add is that if the system is going to change, it will have to be from people, I would argue, who don't like the current incumbent, that is, like me.
Yeah.
Because, of course, if you do like him or her, then you lose a certain degree of credibility because it looks like the only reason you want to change the rules is to keep your man or woman in power.
Right.
Yeah. Campaign finance reform should happen before this happens, Professor Zimmerman?
Well, I would say in conjunction. And as I mentioned earlier, I think the problem is, if anything, much more severe at the congressional level. That is, the problems of campaign finance and also of redistricting, which are separate but linked, give incumbency a much greater power in Congress, specifically in the House of Representatives, than they do in the presidency. It seems to me, though, that all of this should happen at the same time.
And what about voter apathy? You were commenting on how our listeners weren't giving voters a lot of credit for making the right choice or not trusting voters. But a lot of us don't vote. The numbers are pretty low.
Absolutely. And you know, it's interesting. Every 4 years, George Will, who's a columnist that I typically don't agree with, writes a column saying, oh, the Zimmermans of the world are complaining about low voter turnout. Low voter turnout is a great thing. Low voter turnout shows that Americans are pretty much happy. People aren't political because they don't have to be. I don't think that's true. I think what we hear on today's show and on many other shows that you do is that the voters are deeply dissatisfied,
mm-hmm.
And yet they don't feel like they have the power to alter things. I would argue that the support for this amendment in a strange sort of way illustrates that paradox. On the one hand, we're very dissatisfied, but on the other, we don't believe that we can do anything about it, or we don't believe that we should have the power or right to do something about it.
You know, Karen also brought up another point that we haven't talked about at all during this hour, is that the lame duck president also has no, the people in his own party don't pay attention to him.
Oh, absolutely.
Mm-hmm.
And that makes it quite difficult to get any sort of agenda accomplished. Interestingly, none of your callers brought up a common retort that I hear to this argument, which is that, you know, even though there's no check from the voters on these lame ducks, there's a check in so-called history. That is, the incumbent, although they don't have to think about being reelected, has to think about how history will judge them.
Mm-hmm.
And therefore, that provides a kind of check. I don't buy it because, as a historian, I know that history is eminently changeable. And indeed, I think our current incumbent is banking on that. I imagined a little thought balloon coming out of his head at the funeral for Jerry Ford, and the thought balloon said something like, okay, you know, when this guy got voted out of office, he was kind of widely dismissed as, in the worst case, a buffoon, and in the best case, kind of a nice guy, but very ineffectual. Mm-hmm. But now look at him. You know, we're all here worshiping him because he was such an excellent dude, and that's what's going to happen to me. And I think that my guess is that Bush probably believes or wants to believe a species of that, and I'm not predicting the future. One day that might come to pass. All I'm suggesting is that the example of Ford tells us that it's not really a check on somebody's present-day behavior because the presidents know that these views change over time.
Karen, thank you so much for the call. With your cold, Lauren and Delavan. Hi, you're on the air.
Good morning, Joy. Thank you for taking my call.
Yeah, thanks for calling.
Yeah, I think your professor is all wet. I'm sorry to disagree with him, but I'm sorry.
Is that a compliment or an insult?
Well, yeah, I think the idea of having a president spending his life trying to get himself reelected, you know, is against what the office is supposed to be. He's supposed to be working for us and for the government. And sometimes making a choice is not necessarily the popular choice. You know, if he wanted to do it the way the professor here is suggesting, giving the guy tenure, why not just replace his entire policy with an internet poll that people just vote on what they want him to do instead of what he feels to do is right? We elect this man to represent us in a representative republic that we are to do a job. And there are checks and balances. They're called congressmen and senators. If we don't like the job he does, as in the case of some in the past, we can boot him out of there. But I don't think giving the guy an extended length of time to be in there is simply going to be best for our country. And I'll take my comments off the air. And again, thanks, Joy.
Yeah, thanks. And I'll point out that Lauren, if I'm remembering correctly, does have Republican-leaning politics and may have also been a supporter of President Bush.
Well, again, I'm bemused and confused by the contradiction in the call. On the one hand, the gentleman says, if we don't like him, we can boot him out. And on the other, he says, we need term limits.
I think he was saying that the Congress could boot him out with impeachment or something.
I see. I missed that part. Mm. You know, he used terms like tenure. Let me tell you, I have tenure, and nobody can vote me out. Mm. And I'm not suggesting that any president have tenure. I'm suggesting that every 4 years, which is not that long, some of the founding fathers wanted it to be shorter than that, that we receive the right to decide. That's all. I don't suggest that we do everything by referendum. The caller is exactly right. The reason we have elected representatives is that we can't do everything by representatives. We can't and shouldn't. These people are empowered to, quote, do what they think is best. But we, too, are empowered or should be empowered to judge their decisions. And the problem with this amendment is it removes that power.
Yeah. Kathy in Madison sent an email. I have long believed term limits should be eliminated, but after two terms, the incumbent should have to run as an independent. I'm not sure. Do you think that makes any difference, Professor Zimmerman?
Well, that's interesting. It'd be very hard to pull off in this country because the two-party system is so deeply ingrained. Mm-hmm. Now, of course, in some ways, this touches on the issues of campaign finance reform and, indeed, of redistricting, because some argue that if we had serious reforms of those systems, that, indeed, the two-party system would – the two parties would have less power than they would. It's kind of hard to understand how the emailer envisions this happening.
Mm-hmm.
But I do agree with what I interpret as the thrust of the email, which is that the two parties themselves have far too much power and far too much resonance, and there isn't a wide enough array of choice.
Yeah. Leon in Milwaukee. We're almost out of time, Leon, but go ahead.
A couple of quick things. First of all, I like the idea of extending the term of the president from 4 years to five. I mean, the job is a lot more complicated now than it was in the late 18th century. Second of all, I think the two-term limit is a good idea if you keep it for 5 years. But the third point is, what's so magical about the person? If you like the policies, we can vote for the person's designated successor or not. I mean, the man himself is not, or person, him or herself, is not so magical, I don't think. Thank you for hearing my comment.
I think that's a fascinating point. But again, I think it's so fascinating that the voters should be allowed to judge it. It seems to me that the caller is raising one of the really profound questions in any elected system, which is, you know, are we voting for a person's, quote, character, whatever that might be, their personality, or are we voting for their policies? And that's a, you know, that's a really interesting and basic question. But again, I don't see why we should have rules that peremptorily answer it. Because that's, you know, that's what the caller is suggesting. The caller is suggesting that what we do is create a system whereby you can't judge a person's character anymore because he or she can't run again. And again, it seems to me the character v. policy question is one that the voter should be allowed to answer.
Yeah. Well, you know, we're just about out of time here. Do you foresee any movement on your idea in Congress?
Well, you know, historians aren't supposed to predict the future, but on this one, I think I can predict the future, and the answer is no. There are supporters of this kind of reform. Interestingly, Steny Hoyer, who's now the majority leader, much to the chagrin of Nancy Pelosi, who wanted somebody else. Hoyer, ever since 1985, has introduced a measure to begin the amendment process on this question in the House of Representatives every term, and obviously there are two-year terms there.
We have to leave it there. Thanks a lot for being with us.
Thanks very much. It was fun.
Yeah, John Zimmerman, professor of history and education at New York University.